This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Let's talk about Rebecca Harrow. This is the woman who made the story up about being assaulted in the parking lot of the sporting goods store. And when she came to, the baby was gone, although it's all bullshit. None of it happened. She's arrested and she's been charged with this. She's still standing by her man in prison, at least as of her last idiotic interview that she gave. Let's talk about that. I mean, what the hell's going through one's mind? Let's reproduce with a guy who almost killed his first daughter. This seems like a lovely human being to begin a family with.
Dependent personality is where my head went with that, envisioning what would it be like to sit and talk with her. Probably someone who really doesn't have much of a sense of self or identity apart from him, mm-hmm. was very likely abused by him herself and has lived in fear of him. Tremendous fear of him, still may be in fear of him, but at the same time have that trauma bond going where she desperately wants to please him, wants to keep him happy, and wants to protect him. And so, yeah, terrible, terrible headspace to be in would be what Rebecca lives with.
Does that absolve her of guilt in any of this, of being in a household with someone who was capable of doing this and did, in fact, kill their child? Does that absolve her of any of it?
I don't think, as far as a moral responsibility for protecting her child, she had a moral responsibility to protect her child. Mm-hmm. She has lied to law enforcement. She's going to be found guilty of all of that, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Does it have some weight when it comes to what should her punishment be? The way that she came into the relationship with certain personality problems, her own abuse history, abuse by this man, there is probably where there's some wiggle room with, does that get taken into account? I mean, would a jury hear evidence of what she had been put through, and what, when we talk about her innate capacities and incapacities were, and would that impact in some kind of a penalty phase eventually? That's where I would see it being relevant.
I mean, doesn't it come back to, I mean, this sounds really trite, but hurt people hurt people. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't excuse what she did, but it explains it a bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It does explain it a bit. And if we knew her story, we could all in likelihood have some degree of compassion for her. But I think when it comes down to, is there a moral responsibility? If you give birth to a child, you are there to protect and keep that child safe always.
Yeah.
Always. That's simply the foundation.
Yeah. I think the major concern I would have here with this is the fact that she could be released at a time where she could still reproduce. Mm-hmm. And if I were a betting man, I'd bet that bitch would make some more kids. If she had the opportunity, it probably would happen because for whatever reason, it would happen. It just seems to work that way with folks like this. And again, another contender, maybe not, you shouldn't be having kids. You've shown us this doesn't work out well the first time or two. But of all the restrictions that could be put onto her, if she were to be released, I'm sure that would not be one of them. It isn't one of them. It can't be one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And so often the folks that we can look at and have tremendous compassion for them on one hand, but on the other hand, realize this is not a person who should be having children. And so often those are the folks who are having children, having lots of children.
Yeah, way too many of them. I mean, it's a cycle. And that's the scary part of it is... you know, even because once you remove the abuser from the situation, if the child survived, good luck. You know, it's basically, let's hope you get someone in your world that can get you on a good path. Otherwise, it repeats. That's why we end up looking at these folks and go, what happened to you? Oh, okay. Like Stacey said, in no way excuses is an excuse, but it explains. Mm-hmm. And we're very good at explaining things, and that's great, but we're very, very bad at getting to where the problem occurs that we're trying to explain and avoiding that problem to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And for someone like Rebecca, I would think that if we look at what places here can you make an intervention from a clinical standpoint that might do some good, you might really be able to get her in a treatment program, you know, for women who have been abused and or have had children removed from their care, or, you know, all these different intervention points, and actually do some good with her. So I would say there would be a potential for early intervention before a child is harmed, you know, and before the next one would happen, that you might see mm-hmm. some growth with her. Maybe.
The question in a case like this, I think is, you know, is this guy, is he evil? Is he out there viciously killing children? His first story of his daughter was that she didn't even make a lot of sense to me. Like, she got stuck between something. And I'm like, how does this even happen? It probably didn't. That's the thing. He had that story. The story on this child, which has been changed a few times, there's allegations that he told police he accidentally rolled over on Emmanuel and then went out into the desert or whatever, and then buried him to grieve so he could go back and see him again later. Do you buy it? Do you think this is just a completely incompetent moron who rolled over on his baby child, who you should not be sleeping next to at 7 months old, because you could roll over on your child and kill it? Right. And he's just that stupid and did that? You know, or is this, you know, a horribly abusive? I mean, you can go either super incompetent, which I would buy, or super abusive, or really a combination of the both. But how do you know in a situation like this?
I would guess that story was the best he could come up with, and it's mm-hmm. not a very good story, which doesn't speak very well mm-hmm. of his intellect. So I would guess that he was acting out in aggression, and that's certainly what appears to have happened in the first case with the first child. And this is somebody with poor impulse control who likes things to be a certain way, and babies get in the way. Babies are mm-hmm. noisy. Babies get into things and test parents' limits all the time. And I'm guessing this is a person that has very low impulse control and just lashes out when he's angry.
Yeah, that's somebody you really want to spend time with, isn't it?
Mm. Seems like one you'd want to swipe right on, right? You're like, mm-hmm. he seems like a great one. He's going to be
great guy. Mm-hmm.
He's going to be great. So when we go back to the assumption we were talking about earlier, that all parents, they're capable of this, they're capable of that, because they are parents. It seems there are so many that are completely missing the parenting gene. Maybe it's not a gene, but the parenting blueprint. Not that we all have it. I mean, it's a crapshoot when you have kids. You're like, well, let's figure this shit out. But usually you can kind of have some place to start to some way, shape, or form, or some degree. But there seems to be so many that have zero clue that this is a life in front of you that you need to take care of and protect. The attention just strictly stays on themselves and mm-hmm. their own humanity, or lack of humanity, their own narcissism, their own needs, and have zero. It never flips over. It never flips over to, this is the person I have to care for. And I know many parents that are good parents. We all kind of say, yeah, when they showed up, this is a switch flipped. And it was like, it just happened. I think for a lot of people, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And do we need to identify that sooner in parents? And what do we do when we do identify that before anything ever happens?
Yeah, you have to have a tremendous amount of maturity to mm-hmm. care for another infant. I remember I was only 16 when I had mm-hmm. my first, which yeah. is, we would say, not an optimal age to be parenting. But I remember bringing the baby home and looking at it and going, okay, well, I've done the breastfeeding and I've done the diapers and I've done the this and I've done the that, and I've jumped through all the hoops. Now, when do I get a break? Mm-hmm. And it's like, never. And mm-hmm. I remember sitting with that reality of, you never, ever get a break. And even when this kid is 18 and moves on and is in college or whatever, it's like, you're still parent. you're still needing to be present for that person in some way at some time throughout the course of their lives. It's like a role you're never not occupied with. Mm-hmm. And there are people who just seem, no matter what age they are, they don't have that capacity to put another person first, to put their own needs aside. And, you know, it's how do you identify it? I don't know that you always can, but certainly we do see a lot of times where folks do not have the stability and the maturity that they need in order to put their kids first. And that's why we are talking about what we're talking about today.
Go ahead, Tony.
I was going to say, does that come from example? Does that come from conditioning? Or is that something that is just in us or just not in us?
I think it's maturation. It's that, you know, that certain level of maturity that you have to get to yourself. And some people I was capable at 16 of being a very mature person.
Yeah, yeah.
Many people never are. And so it's just sort of that way that you develop. And certainly if you were raised in a family by wonderful, mature, giving parents who could always be present for you and meet your needs and knew how to set boundaries and limits and do all those adult kinds of things, mm-hmm. But always see that your needs were met and cared for and things were, you were in the right environment and all of that. If you were raised in that kind of home, you're going to integrate that in a much better way than somebody who was never raised with that.
Yeah.
I agree. I never had that drive to have children and it felt really strange. I've never changed a diaper. I mean, I have made it to the age that I am. I have never changed a diaper. Now I've just never felt the draw. I'd see a baby and I'd be like, here, you can have it back. I don't want it. But I'm not kidding. I mean, it's almost offensive to.
And it's good you recognize that in you.
I did at a very early age. I was never drawn to infants. And I felt like there was something wrong with me as a woman that, gosh, all of my friends are just like, oh my God, look at this baby. And I'm thinking, ew, it just spit up. You know, and I was absolutely disgusted by these things that were pooping and vomiting and stinking and crying all the time. And as I've gotten older, it's kind of settled down a bit, but I had stepchildren who had babies and I was just like, I can't, please don't make me hold it. Please don't. But you put a puppy or kitten in front of me, I can't get enough. That puppy or kitten could crap on me, have diarrhea on, I don't care.
And you would have been the one setting the law for the pets before the children in 1848.
But I know this about myself, and I just don't think other people are that aware. They give in to the peer pressure, that they see your friends doing all the babysitting, and you have to be doing that, but you're not comfortable doing it. I have a self-awareness where I just think, I know what my limitations are, and I couldn't fake that. Mm-hmm. It just, when I hear a baby crying, it's just like fingernails on a chalkboard. I can't deal with it. But I never pretended that I had to do it. I never gave in to the peer pressure. My career was very important to me. Having my pets were very important to me. A good relationship's important to me. Those are the things that matter to me. And I think you need to be true to yourself. If you don't want to have children, nobody's forcing you to.
Yeah.
Unless you're forced.
Well,
I mean, unless that happens. Yeah.
That's a whole other discussion, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Of course. But yeah, if that makes me a weird person, I will own it. But I just never wanted a child. And again, so it's a fair warning. If you've got an infant and you want me to hold it, I'll do it competently. The child will not be harmed, but I will not enjoy it.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.